Welcome to Committing Faith in Public. This is the podcast for people who want to be inspired by individuals and communities of faith doing good work in public. Our guests tell stories of their work of weaving a more just, kind, and diversity-inclusive society. Our starting place for stories is Oklahoma because that is where we live, and because many people, both in Oklahoma and beyond, are surprised when they learn that interreligious friendly, pro-democracy, diversity welcoming, public good-oriented religion even exists in Oklahoma. So through this podcast, we're spreading good news and encouraging you in your faith and public life work. I'm Gary Peluso-Verden, President Emeritus at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and working on the Religion in Public Life initiative for the seminary. Welcome. I'm here today with the Reverend Dr. Ray Owens. Ray is the senior pastor of Metropolitan Baptist Church here in Tulsa, and he also is are you the executive director of the MetCares?
So the MetCares Foundation, I am the chairman of the board for the MetCares Foundation.
Good. He's also an affiliate faculty member here at Phillips Theological Seminary. And Ray, I'm so glad to have you on today.
Thanks, Gary.
Great. I want to talk about the Greenwood Leadership Academy, which is the private-public partnership charter school that the Met founded, or the MetCares founded, the foundation founded. But first, I'd like to let our listeners know a little bit about Metropolitan Baptist Church. What's your elevator speech for somebody who's never heard about the Met before?
The Metropolitan Baptist Church is over a century old. It's been around since 1917. In fact, we started in a basement of an apartment building.
Okay.
So we say we've moved from a basement to the church on the hill in 100 years. So it's been around a long time. Uh-huh. I've been there 14 years. So it will be 14 years in December.
Wow, I didn't know it had been that long.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
It's a growing, vibrant church, intergenerational, people from all sectors of greater Tulsa. And it's just been a wonderful place to be planted and work and grow. And so, we also go by now the Met Church. We have a little nickname. So the official name, of course, is the Metropolitan Baptist Church. But people know us in Tulsa as the Met.
And I've heard you describe the worship format there as Bapticostal. What does that mean?
Exactly. So it is a blend of kind of the Baptist church worship flow and what I call kind of a neo-Pentecostal feel as well. So there's a very charismatic component to the worship experience. We engage in the traditional kind of call and response that's very familiar in kind of the Black church tradition. So if the preacher is preaching, the preacher doesn't just preach. People have to talk back to the preacher.
Because
he or she always needs to hear somebody say amen or say it. So, it is a place where, we are not afraid to make some noise and clap our hands and lots of use of your body and worship, lifting up hands. So, very kind of neo-Pentecostal feel. Interestingly, I grew up in a similar church down in Austin, Texas, and we called ourselves Bapticostal. We identify as a Baptist church, but certainly there is a Pentecostal feel to the Met experience, for sure.
And I don't know if Ray could say this, but I'm going to say it's got one of the most enviable staffs around.
Yeah.
Fantastic musicians.
I mean, it is a great team. That is one of the things that I have been really proud of in these 14 years is the church has attracted some phenomenal talent. We lost just recently one of our, rock stars in Reverend Alexis Carter, who married my friend and our colleague here at Phillips Seminary. So we did experience a major loss there, but we've got some great people doing some good work at the Met Church.
Certainly under your leadership, it seems that the Met is a public facing kind of church.
Very much so.
Very much in the community.
Yep.
Does that predate you, or is that something that you brought along or have emphasized?
So that does predate me. My predecessor, his name was Henry L. Collier. He was the second African American firefighter in the city of Tulsa.
Huh? Okay.
Very active in the NAACP. Uh-huh. And was one of the trailblazers in this city. And of course, the church was very much behind his public life. He and his wife both were pretty much public figures. She was the principal for a very long time of the historic Booker T. Washington High School here in Tulsa,
right.
And was one of the people who helped to oversee the integration process for that school in the 70s and, of mm-hmm. course, into the mm-hmm. 80s. Mm-hmm. So they were both very much public figures, and the church was very involved. So when I came, we became more intentional about our public, you know, facing orientation. We, in fact, documented this as a part of our strategic vision for who we were to become, and look to make sure that the church is highly visible in the community, deeply engaged, is a place that listens to the needs of the community. In fact, when we built the building that we're in now, that was in December of 2011, that we went there. One of the commitments we made to this community, particularly in North Tulsa, that this building would not just be a place for Sunday morning worship and Wednesday night Bible study and activities for kids who are members of the church, that it would be one of the hubs of North Tulsa, the place where people congregate for all kinds of purposes, from political engagement. We've hosted a debate between the candidates for the state superintendent's position, for example. Right now, we are the voting precinct. So today is an election voting day here in Tulsa. So the church is open as we speak, and that's the place where people in this particular precinct are voting. So we've been very intentional about making sure that the church is an outward-facing entity.
Well, one of those outward-facing enterprises certainly is the school. And before we get to the school per se, if I remember correctly, you were involved in some way in Teach for America. And so tell us a little bit about that and how that might have affected your sense of either being equipped or being called to be in leadership with the congregation about a public school start.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually am a charter member of the Teach for America Corps, in fact. And so, I wear that as a badge of honor. When Wendy Kopp started Teach for America, she had a small team of people who put together a recruitment strategy to bring at least 500 recent college graduates together in Los Angeles to train in order to go out and teach in some of our nation's most underserved, under-resourced public schools. So I was one of the original 500. Teach for America was still very much in its incipient stages, and we were still figuring things out. So I taught for 2 years in South Central LA. I was a first grade teacher, and then actually went on to work for Teach for America for the next 3 years in fund development and recruitment and selection. I headed up the recruitment and selection team for a couple of years, in fact. And that all happened right before going to seminary. One of the commitments that Teach for America core members are asked to make is to commit oneself to a lifelong interest in and advocacy for public education, particularly in under-resourced schools. And so the idea is that even after teaching for 2 years, men and women who come out of the Corps are expected to always stay involved in some way in this work, whether one is a lawyer or a doctor or a preacher, for that matter. Many of us have maintained a commitment to either volunteering in schools or serving on school boards. Many of Teach for America alum have been elected to school board seats. I actually serve on the Tulsa Tech school board, in fact. And so it's a part of our DNA, if you will. Well, that led me to, after seminary and even in my first call here as a regular tenure track faculty to Phillips, to really think seriously about how my call in ministry might intersect with my passion for improving educational outcomes for kids in public schools. Mm. In fact, I looked at this very question with my dissertation. I looked at the intersection between African Americans' understanding of religion and African Americans' participation in their educational pursuits. And I saw lots of instances in our tradition where Black people viewed education as some sort of with some sort of religious zeal. In fact, one of the examples I often use is comes from W.E.B. Du Bois's book, where he refers to education as the pathway to Canaan. So if you'll read that, throughout there are all these times where he's connecting the idea of education with and uses a religious language to describe the pursuit of education. And so that led me to, once I became the pastor of the Metropolitan Church, to make education and public education in particular a major part of our outreach work, which led us to a conversation about what can we as the church do to improve educational outcomes for kids, especially African-American kids in North Tulsa. And that's basically the work of the MetCares Foundation.
And so is the foundation created in order to facilitate the Absolutely. School project?
Yeah. So, well, it really started the first year that I was the pastor of the Metropolitan Church. I asked the congregation to make a pledge to a local school. At that time, it was the Kipp School, a pledge of $30,000 and 1,000 volunteer hours. And we were to do that over the course of 3 years. And that, you know, sort of put us in the position where people refer to the Met Church as the education church, because we were deeply concerned about educational outcomes for our kids. Well, in 2014, then, I hosted at the church a meeting where we invited 125 African-American leaders to come and hear the data around educational outcomes on the national level and educational outcomes in North Tulsa. And some of the data that we were introduced to was incredibly disturbing. Mm-hmm. And we left there both outraged and optimistic, because we realized that we had in our community resources to be able to turn that around. So we asked the group to come back 3 months later. And that time we brought in a number of national figures, the former chancellor of DC Public Schools, Michelle Rhee, who is also a Teach for America alum and a personal friend, her husband, who is then the mayor of Sacramento, Kevin Johnson, who also played for Phoenix in the NBA for a while. And both are education advocates, and they helped me to bring together a panel of folk from all over the country to look at the educational outcomes and consider what the African-American community, particularly Black churches, might do to participate in the process of increasing academic outcomes for kids. Well, the second meeting, there were over 300 people there, we left with the resolve that we would identify 15 people who would spend, I think we had a year, 15 people who would spend a year traveling the nation to look at high-performing schools in under-resourced, low-income African-American communities. And, and then we kind of came up with a white paper that kind of outlined the best practices that we gleaned from this year-long fact-finding tour. And from that, we developed the model for the Greenwood Leadership Academy, and we are in the third year of that school. We started with pre-K to first grade. Each year, we add a grade, so now we're up to third grade, so we have pre-K to third grade, and we have just over 300 kids in the school.
Wow, 300 kids already.
Yeah, absolutely.
And are you adding a year each year?
We add a grade every year. So next year we should add the fourth grade. And then the idea is that we will phase in GLA, we call it, and the school that once was in that building will phase out, and we will ultimately run our own school, the Greenwood Leadership Academy, there in that building. One of the great things that we've seen already is the community involvement and community buy-in for Greenwood Leadership Academy has actually led to a dramatic increase in student enrollment there. We inherited a school that was the had the highest opt-out rate of any Tulsa public schools in the TPS system. Families were choosing to send their kids to other places, private schools. For those who had the transportation, they were taking their kids across town to other schools. We actually saw a 66% increase in families returning to this building, largely because from day one, and that was the first meeting on Juneteenth of 2014, we were listening to the desires, the hopes of community members about what they wanted to see in a school. One of the things that came out is that people wanted a school that reflected and embodied what we call Black excellence. We live in a city where, you know, there is an incredible history of Black excellence, Black wealth, Black solidarity, Black folk who built a community at the early part of the 20th century that was self-sustaining. They had their own hotels and law firms and a movie theater. Many other parts of Oklahoma were even very well developed. And of course, we know that in 1921, the race massacre led to the near annihilation of that incredible community. So what we heard from families in North Tulsa is that we want to rebuild that kind of system where Black people are the ones making decisions about the curriculum, about what parts of history need to be told about. And actually, one of the features of the school is its focus on business and entrepreneurship. And so that's why we picked our colors, navy and gray. We want our kids to be thinking about business, even when they are four years old. What, how do I position myself? Should I decide that's what I want to do as an adult, to own my own business and create jobs for others in our community? And so that's the vision. And people feel like they see their fingerprints on the design of the school. And because of that, they have bought in, and we've seen a real uptick in enrollment.
That's great. So what's the relationship between this school and Tulsa Public Schools?
Yeah, so that's, and it points to a very interesting structure that we created. It is actually, Greenwood Leadership Academy is actually a partnership school. So we are a hybrid between a charter school. So we're not a charter school. A charter school is totally independent. Those kids in charter schools are not Tulsa Public Schools students, right? Okay. Charter school has its has autonomy to run its own program, hire its own teachers. The downside is when a child goes to a charter school, that child is no longer in the TPS portfolio.
Okay.
So that's the charter. Then there are the district schools like Eisenhower and Mayo. They are run by the district. And between that, we have Greenwood Leadership Academy, which is a partnership school. So we have the autonomy of the charter school, but our kids are actually still registered as Tulsa Public Schools students. So Tulsa Public Schools enrollment is not negatively impacted by a kid coming to
and
our
that,
school.
That's a big story in Tulsa right now because of the $20 million of cuts that the public school is trying to make in order to get its budget in line. And that's directly related to not only the underfunding at the legislative level for many years, but also the decline in enrollment in Tulsa Public Schools.
Exactly.
So a big deal.
I mean, we're still figuring out the kind of protocols of a partnership school, but I think there is some real value here. One of the things that I appreciate about this structure is that we are able to access the resources that Tulsa Public School has, from its transportation system to food services. We have a facility. So charters oftentimes have to figure out their own transportation, their own, find a building, and you know, it's very costly and in a state like Oklahoma, where our per pupil allotment is woefully low comparatively,
right.
it's very hard mm-hmm. to use those limited resources to build a system outside of the existing mm-hmm. district systems.
Mm-hmm. Is Greenwood the only partnership school
at this
point?
It is the first and only partnership school in the state of Oklahoma.
Okay.
In fact, the legislation that was passed, that was probably in about 2014 or so, was pushed through largely by the previous superintendent, Keith Ballard, who was interested mm-hmm. in this model as a way to protect the enrollment of the school district. And so it's somewhat of a pilot at this point,
uh-huh.
but I'm sure many of us are hopeful that there will be others that will come into the partnership umbrella.
So where are you at in realizing the vision for what you wanted the school yeah. to be? And then I'd like to follow up with what's gone as you expected yeah. and what has created some new and interesting challenges.
Yeah. So this is year three for the school. And to give some context, the MetCares Foundation, one of the things we learned in our fact-finding tour from Sacramento to Harlem and lots of places in between is that we did not want to create a great school and just plant it in a blighted community. Great schools don't happen in a vacuum. We wanted our kids to be in a community that was vibrant and thriving, and the aesthetics were appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So we formed the organization to focus on three work streams. One is great schools. The second is community engagement and ownership. So there's the community organizing work that has led to incredible community involvement in kind of the design for our school and the future of the organization. But the third is economic development. So we have a parcel of land that we plan to develop. It's 23 acres. We call it MCF 23. 23 acres where we will anchor that with a school, and there will be housing and a retail component. So that's the larger vision. Where we've made it so far is we have opened the first school. We hope to open the second school in 2022. This is the third year of School One, Greenwood Leadership Academy. As I said, the good news is our enrollment numbers are strong, solid. We have phenomenal community buy-in and support. Every time we go up for renewal, our parents and our other stakeholders show up in large numbers to say, yes, we continue to believe in Greenwood Leadership Academy. What hasn't gone the way I had hoped, and certainly what hasn't gone the way I'd expected, has a lot to do with staff turnover. I mean, we really have to address the talent pool crisis in our state, and frankly, the way we value and compensate educators.
And these would be all TPS employees?
Well, so our employees at Greenwood Leadership Academy, they are actually MetCares employees. So that is the distinction. Like a charter school, we hire and fire our teachers.
And they set the salaries?
Have autonomy with salary. So we actually can pay a little bit more competitive salaries than the district school, for example. So we get to embrace those kinds of freedoms in the same way that charters charters do. But yeah, even with that, we've seen incredible staff turnover. We had a dynamic team day one. People were so excited about this vision and the work, but it's hard work. And we've been open 3 years, and the principal that we have, this is our third principal. So that's been tough.
That's hard. That's hard.
And teachers have come and gone, and so we've had to struggle with finding new teachers in the middle of the year. I mean, this is something that districts and charters all face, but it's real, and it has a negative impact on our ability to perform the way that we want to perform. We feel like in year three, we've kind of hit our stride. And we have a fairly solid staff that we think will stay with us over the long haul. And so we're really, really hopeful there and praying that that is the case.
I would think that starting a public school is not for the faint-hearted.
No. It is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
The year one was crazy. I mean, just learning how to open a school and all the factors related to, you know, just day one of the school. I mean, the kids don't know where to go and parents don't know where to drop their kids off. And I mean, there were days where it was pure chaos. And we worked very hard to be prepared. A good friend of mine said, well, the good news is you'll never have to go through year one again with this school because, you know, you spend the first year figuring out how to run a school. We did. We learned how to run a school. Year two, there was, you know, incredible improvement. Year three, it looks like a different place. I mean, kids, you know, seem to understand the culture of the building, and there is strong evidence of real order in the school. So that's great.
That's great. If another religious organization, church, mosque, synagogue, if they were interested in putting together a partnership school also, what advice would you have for them?
Engage in deep community listening sessions. I mean, you have to hear from the people whose children will populate your school. I think that's the strength of the MetCares work. We really did take our time. By now, we have had one-on-one or small group meetings with over 1,600 North Tulsa individuals. I mean, and many of those have been one-on-one. We have a great young man. His name is Greg Robinson, worked for two presidential campaigns, Clinton campaign, Hillary Clinton's campaign, and Barack Obama's campaign, and some other local campaigns before that. So he's a hometown boy, grew up in North Tulsa. When Hillary Clinton campaign was ended, it was about the time we were about to open up Greenwood Leadership Academy. We recruited him to do our community organizing work. A little different from political organizing, but he's got all the right stuff to like make this work happen. So you need somebody who's going to lead the effort to really hear from people in the community. It means sitting down with parents. It means sitting down with caregivers and potential staff and teachers. And so I think that's the biggest lesson that I've learned is that people need to feel like they've been heard. And when they are, then they will stand with you through not only, you know, the celebration days, but the really difficult days, because we have had some very hard days at Greenwood Leadership Academy. And sometimes, you know, we've made some mistakes, some missteps. And I think in a different setting, the school would not have survived some of the hard hits that have happened there. But because people really feel like this is our project, and we're going to stand with it, and we're going to, you know, work to fix it, we've been able to weather some incredible storms.
And how has your job changed since your job as senior pastor changed since taking this on?
For 2 years, it was just unbelievable. I mean, the workload, and frankly, it just became, you know, just physically draining to be able to try to push this work forward, the Greenwood Leadership Academy and MetCares work, because I had become the face of the work and was responsible for the fundraising and not necessarily producing, you know, all the documents and the application, for example, for the partnership school, which was 408 pages. We had great people and do have great people who do that, but just the oversight, reading everything, vetting the ideas took just an incredible amount of time. We have been able to put together a solid staff on the MetCare side. And so I'm not as hands-on as I was, say, in 2016 through 2018. We have a person who's has a contract with us, who is our basically a project director, who was the deputy chief of staff for DC Public Schools for 7 years, and if anybody knows how to open a school and run a school, it's this young woman. Her name is Lisa. And we've been able to keep her on. And so she helps on the operational side, keeps things going. We had an incredible executive director, Ashley Phillipson, and she led the organization for a little more than a year. She's a Teach for America alum. She taught in Houston and helped to run a charter school down there. She did such a great job that that our mayor identified her work and hired her from us. I have let him know on more than one occasion that I was not very happy about that. Uh-huh. But she's doing a great work in the mayor's office.
Okay.
And to some extent, it's related to the kind of work that she did for us at the Met Cares Foundation. So we have a great interim executive director who's keeping things going. So I say that to say that at this point, I'm actually able to give more of my time, to the work that I was called to do here with the church. But for me, you know, Gary, I see this an extension. The church supports my involvement in the Met Cares vision. In fact, the church lends its support to the Met Cares vision. We see this as an extension of our ministry. Our members volunteer hours. The church gives money to the work every year. We're there for school board meetings when it's time for the renewal of GLA. So it's very much, you know, a project the church holds near and dear to our understanding of what it means to do ministry. But we were very intentional also about making sure that this city sees the Met Cares work as bigger than the Metropolitan Church.
Absolutely.
In fact, our board is made up of, most of the members of the board are not members of the church. The staff at GLA, I think there are two or three who are members of the church, because we wanted this to be something that the whole community owned. And I think that has been the case.
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I didn't hear you say this was a parochial school.
Yeah, right.
You wanted to make sure this was a community-based school. And I'm also hearing such a high congruence between the themes of Black excellence and entrepreneurship in what the church did. Promoting Black excellence and entrepreneurship, because you definitely took on an entrepreneurial task in starting this school. Yep. Ray, I'm really glad you came in. Yep. I think this is such a fabulous project.
Thank you.
I think there are a lot of us looking to see how this works out and hopeful that more religious organizations will also see themselves as contributing to the larger fabric of the community by doing something like this. If somebody wants to know more about either the Met or Greenwood Leadership Academy, where should they go?
Yep. Meet us at metcaresfoundation.org. Okay. That will give you the website for the Met Cares Foundation, and it'll have aspects of all the different work streams that we're engaged in. But if you're specifically interested in the Greenwood Leadership Academy, we have there. All you have to do is Google or go to www.greenwoodleadershipacademy.org. Greenwoodleadershipacademy.org will get you to the school. And there is always information about jobs that are available in the building and what's happening with our kids, ways that you can give either your financial resources or the gift of your time, which is the probably greatest need there. We have a great program. We partner with Reading Partners. Reading Partners trains volunteers to come into Greenwood Leadership Academy and read for 1 hour a week with one of our students. It is one of the most rewarding things I think an adult can do.
Reverend Dr. Ray Owens, thanks so much for coming over today and taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to talk with me.
Yeah, this has been fun.
Yep.
Thanks.
Same.
All right.
This has been Committing Faith in Public, a podcast from the Religion and Public Life Initiative at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Copyright PTS and Gary Peluso-Verdet. The views and opinions expressed during the podcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect an official position of Phillips Theological Seminary.